As Don said, the title of the message I'd like to share with you today is Keeping Up with the Joneses. And before I even get started, I'm one of them, and I don't keep up with them. So this is going to be a message about money. And before I even say anything, I want to say this in all sincerity. I think the most private thing in a marriage and in a person's life, and especially in a married life, is the intimacy of the bedroom. That is by far, that is the most private thing a husband and wife have to have. And I think the second most important private thing is your finances. I think it should always be private. It should be, and it should be used in the right way. And I've got a few things I want to share with you in me and Susan's journey. And I'm going to brag on her a couple of times. Already. last month, we've been married 40 years. 40 years. And it's been tremendous. It hasn't been easy, of course, like everything else in life, it has not been easy. But we've had so much more good than bad. And it's been tremendous. And she has been by my side in this journey since when we got married. We were not covenant believers. She was raised in a Baptist church. I was raised in a Lutheran church. I was going to a denominational church when we met and started dating. I ended up going with her to her Baptist church in January. And I believe by April, March, we started going out to Pastor Wickie's. And we became covenant believers in a very short amount of time because we read verses that we'd never seen before, and it convicted us. So having said that, if you will, if you have your Bibles with you, our first reading will be in the book of 1 Timothy chapter 6, and I'd like to read verses 10 and 12. And if you would you all be standing in honor of the Scriptures so that we could all read this together to kind of set the table for today's message. 1 Timothy chapter 6, we want to read together verse 10, 11, and 12. Verse 10. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveteth after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of the flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. Thank you. You may be seated. Now, I want to point out that the first thing that I think is so important is it said the love of money is the root of all evil. I don't believe money in and of itself is bad. It's how you use it. It's how everything else in your life, it's how you use it that makes it good or evil. Your money can be a blessing. Your income can be a blessing, or it can be a curse if you waste your life trying to keep up with the Joneses. And to show you that, I'm going to give you some statistics. I Googled this. I went to two different websites, and I want to share this with you to give a perception of where we are. Now, these came in, I went to two different sites, and they were both pretty close to about the same. And this is according to the third quarter of 2025. Right now, in the United States of America, the credit card debt in the USA, credit card only, is $1,230 billion. That's the credit card. That's not mortgages. That's not car debt. This is credit card only. $1,230 billion. Now, to give you a perception of that, if I went up to Debbie and she says, and I say, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Debbie $1 a second. Every second, I'm going to give her $1. It would take me 11 and a half days to give her $1 million. 11 and a half days at a dollar a second. If I wanted to give her $1 billion, it would take 31 years and 7 months at a dollar a second to give her $1 billion. And if I really wanted to bless her and give her $1 trillion, it would take 31,688 years at a dollar a second. And we have $1,230,000,000,000 just on credit cards. What is going on? What happened? And let me break this down for you even more. According to this website, if you had to guess, what's the average debt of every person in America who has a credit card? Right now, it is between $5,600 and $6,730. That's the average if you have a credit card in America. And by the way, the average interest rate on that debt is 22.8%. Now, of the people who are in debt, what percentage of those people have $20,000 or more in credit card debt? 23%. 23 out of 100 people who have credit card debt have over $20,000 in credit card debt. Here's another thing that I think is really heartbreaking. What percentage of Americans right now in America have less than $1,000 in their savings account? Between 56 and 69% of every American in the United States does not have $1,000 in their savings account. What percentage of them have less than $500? 40%. 40% have less than $500. What percentage of Americans, according to this site in the third quarter of 25, what percentage of Americans have $2,000 or more in their savings account? 19%. Only 19 out of 100 people have at least $2,000 in their savings account. And here's another one. How many people go in debt every year to go on vacation? Who borrow money to take a vacation and go into debt and have this, I'll pay for it when I get back? 36% of all people who take a vacation go on vacation going into debt to go on that vacation. Last one. What percentage of people in America are 100% debt-free? 23%. So only 23 out of 100 people in the United States are totally debt-free. What happened? Well, what I'd like to think is we got away from God's Word. We got our flesh, our carnal nature, the love of materialism. We think we can buy happiness. We think we can buy joy. I think you can rent it for a couple of hours. Go on vacation, go on a move, go do this or do whatever entertainment thing that you enjoy doing. If you have to go in debt, when you come back, you're right back where you were when you started. What'd you gain? You put off where you're at to do something that you shouldn't be doing. And look at the heartache, because I have heard over the years that the biggest reason for divorce in marriage is money. It's not that they don't have enough, it's they fight over it. It's who controls it. And me and Susan, in the 40 years that we have been married, I handle all the money. I pay all the bills. I manage the money. Because I heard in a sermon years ago, we are stewards. of our finances. And if you're a steward, you are not the owner. You're the manager. And what I want to show today is whatever gift you have, whatever you do to make a living, your income, God gave you that gift to have that job, to make that money. And I think He watches us to see how do you manage it. Because this, now this is my opinion. This is strictly, and I could be wrong. If you're somebody who makes $75,000 a year, and you're one of these people I just read about where you're deep in debt and you don't have any money and you don't have any saving, and you think to yourself, well, if I just made $100,000, everything would be better. No. If you can't discipline yourself on $75,000, why would God let you make $100,000? If you can't control yourself, if you can't understand your flesh and you spend to find joy instead of finding it in God's Word. Now again, now I want to be realistic, and I am really heartbroken for Lauren David's generation. Let me ask you this. If I gave you a $100 bill and tomorrow you went to Kroger and took a shopping cart, groceries, how many items could you put in that cart to where the $100 is spent? And then when you're done, you come out in the parking lot and me and you get into my DeLorean and I turn on the flux capacitor and we go back to 20 years ago and you had that $100 and you went back in the same grocery store, would you have twice as many items, three times as many items? It's tough out there. It's tough out there. And money doesn't go as far. I think we're making more, but it doesn't go like it used to. I was blessed. My dad, we had 9 people. We were the Brady Bunch. I lost my mom. My dad remarried. We had 9 people around the table, and my mom didn't work. My dad worked. He was an iron worker. And I never knew hunger. Now, we didn't go on cruises. We didn't go to Europe. The greatest thing, me and my brother, we got to pick a baseball game to go to every summer. And that I'm good. We had our fun. But I graduated in 1977. But Dad provided. And we were comfortable. I never knew struggle. Never, ever knew it. And that's what makes me so happy to have Susan on my team. Because I want to share with you something that we did together. And I don't like to mention numbers. I don't like to, because I'm afraid it might come across as a wrong way. But I want to give an example of what great a wife I have. We got married in 1986. We lived in an apartment. We were living in an apartment. And then we moved to another part. And then we lived in a mobile home in a trailer park. And then we bought a house. And we were in that house about 10 years. Okay, in 1997, I got hired at General Motors. My dream job for me. That's the closest I'll ever get to winning the lottery, was getting my job at General Motors. And we built pickup trucks. And we thought about buying a new house. And I said, well, let's wait, because back then, when I got hired in 97, it was going to take me 2 years to get to full pay. So in 99, I was at full pay. We started out at 80%. Every 6 months, you got a 5% raise, and in 2 years, I'm at full pay. And it just so happened in 1999, our daughter Laura was born. And the best thing about me working there is when Laura was born in April of 99, Susan quit working. And she's been a stay-home mom all of Lauren David's life. What a blessing. What a blessing it was that growing up, Lauren David knew that mom was available 24/7. And Dad went out, and I was the provider, and she kept the house. And I think they had a pretty good upbringing. But what I want to brag about is we decided, because of the situation and because in 2001, we built a home. We decided, we went shopping for one. We decided to get a construction loan, and we bought a plot, and we built our house. Now, when Susan asked me, how much can I spend? Because she built the house. We didn't even have blueprints. My wife designed our house. I said, I have two requests. I need a place for my big screen TV, and I need a place to keep my golf clubs warm in the wintertime. The rest of the house is yours. I'm good. That's all I need. And she said, give me a number. Well, when you go to do this, you have to fill out an application to get a construction loan. And when the numbers came back and they do a credit card check and all this, please take this in humility. They said, okay, Brian and Susan, you can't go, and this is 2001. You've been approved. You can borrow this much, but your monthly house payment cannot be more than $2,100. And I laughed. Huh? That much? And Susan said, what's our budget? Long story short, on December 1st of 2001, we moved in to a 4,000 square foot, four bedroom house on a full fit basement. And because of the way we did it, I took all the money from our house we saw, I put it all in there. And the day we moved into that house, our house payment was $1,080. Okay, I said all that to say this. Not one time did Susan say, I want more. Why can't we go to 15? The bank said 2,100. How many women, wives? We got half of what we were pre-approved for. And she said, I'm good. Okay, why that number? Again, because when I started working there, there was only two shifts. We worked overtime every day. And that house payment was my paycheck for 1 week. And I said, I'm not going to live. I want to enjoy life. It's just a house. And she said, okay. And when we were done, and when you get a construction loan, you get the builder gets 25% to get started, and then he gets another 25%, and then he gets a third 25%, and then when it's closing, he gets his last portion. And then we moved in there, and I bumped it up. I arranged it to where we paid $1,200 a month on that house because I wanted to pay a little extra to bring down the principal. But Susan never said, I want more. I want a bigger house. She said, no. Give me a number. Okay, 20 years later, we sold that house. And now we downsize. We live on a ranch. No more steps for us old folks. Again, give me a number. I gave her a number. And the house we live in, she found it in the range that I gave her. And in 40 years of marriage, on any given day, if you went up to Susan and said, hey, how much you guys got in your savings? I don't know. How much is in checking? I don't know. Brian handles it. How special. How many married men would love to have that? We never fought over money. She trusted me to manage our family's finances. Even after all these years. My mom died when I was in the first grade. And Susan, she didn't want to work. I said, I want Lauren and David to have their mom. And she never fought me over it. And I said all that to get started. So if you will, turn with me. I'm just going to read a few more. Let's turn to Psalms chapter 37. I just want to read verse 16. A little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. right there. A little, under control. You've all heard of Dave. How many of you heard of Dave Ramsey? I got a story I want to share with you. The first time I listened to him, he had a saying, don't act your age, act your wage. You have to live on what you make, or you won't be happy. And I want to share this with you, too. The first time I heard him, I used to work second shift, and I was going to work, and first time I heard him on the radio, and people call in, you know, hey, Dave, how are you today? Better than I deserve. Okay. And I think it was the second or third caller, and I remember this like it was yesterday. He said, hey, Dave, I just came into an inheritance. I need your opinion. I have a $150,000 check in my hand, but I don't know what to do with it. I have $100,000 left on my mortgage, and I don't know if I should pay off my mortgage or take that $100,000 and invest it. And he said what I would have said. He said, before my head hits the pillow tonight, I would write that $100,000 check. And then he said this, let me ask you something. If you had a house that you are happy with and you had $50,000 in the bank, would you go borrow $100,000 and pay interest and have that 100 maybe turn into 180? Because if you invest it, you're not going to make 80. I don't know what the number, I forget, he calculated it. You're not going to make 75,000. You understand compound interest? And I said, boy, that's exactly what I would, that's how I would have seen that. If you had a beautiful home and you got 50, why would you borrow $100,000 to keep up with the Joneses? And even Dave, he had a saying, don't buy something with money you don't have to impress people you shouldn't care about. Because listen, when you're dead, when I'm gone, nobody's going to remember your house, your car, your yearly income. They're going to remember, were you nice to them? Were you kind? Were you friendly? Were you humble? Nobody cares about your house. Nobody cares about your yearly income. Nobody cares about the car you drive. Nobody cares if your golf clubs are brand new or old, used. They don't really care. How good were you? Who were you? Were you a good person? Were you humble? That's what they're going to remember. Okay, now, if you were raised, let's turn to the book of Malachi. Chapter 3, and if you were brought up in a denomination in church, you already know what this is. And I believe, I was raised in a Lutheran church, and I did not, this was never read to me until I was in my early 20s. Malachi chapter 3, verse 8, here we go. Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now where herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall be not room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sake, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground. Neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time of the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall be called, shall call you blessed, for ye shall be the delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Ah, the tithing, guilt trip, as some people call it. Now, I understand a lot of people do believe that this is not for today. I have seen a lot of YouTubes over the years that talk about tithing. And some of them say, if you're in a church and you're bringing up that old-fashioned, old Jewish tithing thing, get out of that church as fast as you can. Because this is not for us. This is not for today. Because what was this for? If you remember, this is for the Levites and the Aaronic priesthood. when Israel got their inheritance, you guys, here's the land, but these guys, they're mine. The Levites and the Aaronites, they received the tithing, and that was how you bless them. I'm going to give you the land, and then you bless them like you're blessing me. Okay? We don't have Levites, the Levitical priest or the Aaronic priest. We don't have that no more, do we? Correct? Okay. But do we still have a storehouse? Do we still have the church? Does the church need finances? Does the church need to build up? If somebody decides, and again, I get back to this, is your own personal decision. If you decide how much money you want to give on a weekly basis to support the local church or the storehouse, that's between you and God. It's nobody's business but yours. But let me ask you this. What if you don't give anything? What if you don't help out? I understand. Where is God in your life? In 2025, how much money did you spend on personal entertainment and enjoyment? And how much money did you give to help out God's work and to help out His cause? Again, this is not a guilt trip. Please understand that. But if somebody decides that they are going to give 10% of their take-home pay and give it to the local church, would that be a bad thing? I don't think so, if you can afford it. And this could change over time. But it tells him how much you trust him, because he said, I will reap to desire. I am here. We need sustenance. We need to be helped. We need this. Now, here's another question, because I was at work one time, and a friend of mine named Tim, he went to one of the biggest churches in the city of Fort Wayne, Faith Assembly. Jimmy Swaggart was Faith Assembly. And it's a mega church. It's a big one. Big one. But Tim said something, he said it very humbly. He said, hey, Brian, do you tithe? And he said, yeah, I do. He didn't say any numbers. He didn't say how much. He was not saying this to brag. He was just saying, do you believe in tithing? And Tim said, yeah, I do. I do it as best I can. I said, yeah, I try to too. I don't think we're not under the old law like we are, because we don't have the Aaronic and Levitical priesthood, but I don't see anything wrong if someone wanted to do that. And then I said, well, Tim, let me ask you something. And this is just me thinking out loud. I said, name a church you would never go to. Well, what do you mean? For instance, I would never go to a Roman Catholic church, ever. And he said, okay, Jehovah's Witness. Okay, no hard feeling, I'm just curious. Here's my question. The people who tithe and offer and give their money to the Catholic Jehovah's Witnesses church that we both agree are false teaching churches, does God bless that money? Because if you were in the Old Testament times and you did this, and this group, what if they gave that money to help build the Tower of Babel, Tower of Baal, and help funded it? We're doing it now. We got all these false churches, and buddy, they got money. A lot of it. I don't have no idea what the balance is at the Roman Catholic Church at Vatican City. I think it's more than Fellowship of God's Covenant People. I know that because we've been coming down here for years. And every time we can come, Susan will text Randa and give the title. Say, hey, we'll be coming down. Okay, we can make it February 7th and 8th. And not one time did Randa respond, okay, thank you, looking forward to it. Oh, by the way, Don's going to send the private jet up to Fort Wayne to fly you down to Florence. Okay, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But do you consider wealth and numbers a successful church? The world does. How many pastors have a private jet? We were at Don's last night. I didn't even see a new Corvette in his driveway. And Don is the financer for us here. And I'm going to share something with you. He told me this many, many years ago. And it really, really blessed me. When Laura and David were real little, where they were living at, we went swimming. They knew a place that had a swimming pool at the association. And this was back in the 2008, 9, 10, and the economy was pretty bad. I mean, General Motors filed for bankruptcy. He said, hey, how are you guys getting through? Oh, we're okay. We're okay, because even through that, I got unemployment and subpay. I got 85% of a 40-hour paycheck. I was laid off for 11 weeks. And because of where we were fine. And Don, he said, well, if you ever need any help, don't be afraid to call. And then he said, you know, we've helped every family here at our church. We've helped them out to get through some time. And he said, you know what? If they pay it back, fine. If they don't, that's fine too. Okay, well, I'm saying that because we still have a storehouse. We don't have Levitical Aaronic priesthood, but we still have a storehouse. And how great would it be if any of us, myself included, something happens, would you rather go to a bank or go to the church and get the money for free? And if you, hopefully, God willing, you can pay it back. But if they don't, that's fine too. Wow. That's a storehouse. That's what it's for. That's what it's for. If you will now turn with me to the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And I'm going to read verse 6 and 7. Verse 6, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. That's what makes him happy. I'm sorry, that's what makes God happy. Do you believe in your church? Do you believe in what you do? Do you budget your paycheck to help out the church, to help out build the storehouse? Because you might need it someday. I know with Laura and David, there's been a few times when they would go get a loan for a car. Now, me and Susan, we're old, and we're debt-free. And I know some people say I probably shouldn't have done this, but I went and co-signed for them. Why? Because if they do it on their own, the interest rate on the money they would have borrowed was like 4.5. But with us old folks, it was like 2.1. And so we did it to help them. And I know, like when David bought his Thunder Shark, his race car, that LT1 Camaro, David still lives at home. But when he got that car, he made a car payment every week. When he got his paycheck, he made a car, and he paid that car off in very short amount of time with very, very little interest. And then, of course, they said, well, you want the extended warranty because, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, you guys don't need that. The guy said, hey, but what if something bad happens? Hey, listen, I'm their extended warranty. Because we're at a situation where me and her mom was able to help them out should something go wrong. And yes, we would lend them. Yes, they would pay it back because they need to learn responsibility. But don't give $2,000 or $3,000 to a thing. And if you don't use that thing, they don't give you that money back. And they add it to your loan and you pay interest on the extended warranty. And I wasn't trying to be arrogant. I just said, we're in a position where I can be their warranty in case something goes wrong. But it took us a while to get to that place. Okay, if you will now, to show you, go to the book of Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And that mammon means money. You can't serve both at the same time with the same zeal. It won't work. You got to choose. And that choice will determine how God blesses you. To show you that, go back to the book of 1 Samuel chapter 15. And I think this still applies today. to today. 1 Samuel chapter 13. And if I can get there. Oh, I'm sorry, chapter 15. I can't read my own writing. I should have been a doctor. Yeah, 1 Samuel chapter 15, and I'm going to read verse 22. And Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken rather than the fat of ram." So what he's saying is, I love obedience over your money. Why? Because when you're obedient, you serve God. When you serve money, you make money your God, and that's where the evil comes from, and God knows that you love money more than me. And it can be very dangerous if you do that, because what do we know about God? He looks inward, we look outward. To show you that, very familiar, go to the book of Luke chapter 18. This is what can happen. Very familiar story. Luke chapter 18. And we'll start in verse 9. "And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves, for they were righteous and despised other." Jesus is speaking. Jesus said, "Two men went into the temple to pray, and one Pharisee, the other a publican. And the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank thee that I am not as other men, are extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this publican. I fast twice a week, and I tithe of all that I possess.' And the publican, standing far off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful unto me, a sinner.' I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalts himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." Okay, now he didn't say this. He, if you read it, this guy, he said it within him, prayed thus with himself. So this guy, maybe he was wealthy. Maybe he had a high income. And maybe he did give the church a lot of money because he was bragging about it. But his heart was all wrong because he thought that that money would buy him favors for God. And because his heart was all wrong, he was serving money more than God, and he thought that elevated him because of his status. And he said, "No, I like this guy over here. He was humble. I'm a sinner. I just want to be forgiven and moved on." And that meant more to him than the guy who served money, even though he gave a lot. It's not the way he wants it. To show you something else too, go to the book of Romans chapter 13. And I want to read verse 8. It says, "Owe no man anything, but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfillment of the law." Okay, now, I think what I mean here is that you're not to owe anybody anything. Now, let's be realistic. Nobody has enough money to go buy a house outright. Most people don't have enough money to go buy a new car or a vehicle outright. Now, this is my opinion, and you might not, this is what I think. When you go buy a house like we did, or you buy, okay, every month you agreed and you signed the papers to where you're going to make this amount of money. You're going to give them this much money every month until that vehicle's paid off. So you owe that person that money every single month. And I think it's your duty to take care of that thing that you owe. Now, there's other things that are involved. And I think it's tragic if you overdo. Like my dad had a great seat. My dad taught me growing up, you cannot live a Cadillac lifestyle on a Chevy paycheck. You can't do it. Don't do it. It won't work. Now, if you get yourself into that mess because of you can't control yourself and you can't discipline yourself and you think that fancy car is going to get you somewhere with people, I think you're going to have a lot of problems. because here's what could happen. Turn to the book of 1 Timothy. This is what it could lead to. 1 Timothy chapter 5. And I want to read verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Okay, an infidel is someone without Christ, basically a modern-day atheist. Now, something Dave Ramsey says all the time, he says, look, first priority, if you're with your money, you have to keep food on the table, you have to keep the lights on. And sometimes life happens. But if you're obsessed with materialism, you're going to have problems because you're not living the way you're supposed to be living. And in my opinion, God will humble you and take you out to the woodshed to see, because a lot of people have called Dave and said, hey, my wife's got this car, I got this. Okay, first thing you knew, you need to sell those cars and go buy you something that'll get you from point A to point B. But the guy at the auto dealer said that the loan went through, and he said I could have. Really? Then why are you calling? Why are you calling me then? Why are you driving something you can't afford? Why are you doing? If you can't take care of your family, how can you help build the storehouse at the local church? You can't do it. What's your problem? Keeping up with the Joneses. Don't do it. Because they don't care. I don't. Your personality is not going to change whatever car you're driving. If you drive something different next month, that's not going to change you. Our daughter Laura, two of her friends bought a house about 2 years ago, autumn. Again, I'm not trying to be, I'm just trying to understand. This is 2026. They bought it. Anyways, we had a 4,000 square, and we paid 11, Theirs is not even 2,000. They pay over $1,500 a month. Okay, what I'm bringing up is that in 2001, they could have bought this, but now they've got half of our house, and they're paying more money for half. That's 2026. And these young kids, listen, it's tough. They're both working. They seem to be making it okay. But that's the world we live in. Okay, if they're living on what they can afford, they're going to be fine. But they didn't buy our house. Today, they could have bought it in 2001, but they're paying more for less. Okay. That's what you have to understand. That's how you control your life. That's what will make you happy. And even God said, if you don't provide for your own, you're an infidel. You might as well be an atheist. Don't you trust me? Well, I'm going to get this car payment, and I know God's going to fulfill my needs. Nonsense. Satan tried that with Christ. Hey, jump off, and maybe he'll catch you. God will catch you. Okay, if you buy a house you really can't afford and it takes more than one weekly paycheck, you think God's going to catch you when you jump off the roof of that fancy schmancy house that you shouldn't have bought in the first place and now you want God to bail you out? Well, I'm hoping God will give me a raise. God will provide. God will provide. He is providing. You couldn't make it on $75,000 a year. You're out of control. Why would he give you more? You're going to be just as bad at $100,000 a year as you are at $75,000. My God, I wouldn't do that. I'm a parent. I would never, hopefully, I would never, ever do that. I think that's how God works. Turn with me now, if you would, to the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 6, right in verse 14. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath the righteousness with the unrighteous? And what communion hath light and darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath that believer with an infidel? Okay, if you're living like the devil, or you're like Dave, you say, if you're living and spending money like a politician, you're an idiot. You're an infidel. Your wife is crying. Your kids are suffering because you're not providing. It's not that you're not providing money. You're not providing them the understand self-control by your actions, because they are watching you. And you're training your kids how to live, hopefully. And hopefully they will take that advice. Verse 16, what hath agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God, as God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them. Be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. So that's what God wants to do. He wants to be your God. He wants to bless you. He wants to fulfill you. But you have to understand your guidelines. You have to understand self-control and discipline. Go to the book of Philippians chapter 4. I'd like to think I've spent most of my life here. Philippians chapter 4, I want to read verse 11 and 12. Now that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therefore to be content. I know both how to be abased, I know how to be abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. You realize that every time you sit down to eat, just enough is a feast. Just enough. That's a feast to a lot of people in the world. I think this is absolutely hilarious. There is starvation around the planet. But here in America, we spend millions of dollars to try and lose weight. And there's starvation throughout the world. And we struggle with weight gain. Hey, I'm retired. I haven't worked in 3 years. I got to work to wear the clothes I wore when I quit 3 years ago. It's not easy when you get a little bit older. You know, it takes self-control. It takes discipline. But be content. When we got married, we lived in an apartment. And we were content. And then we've been content our whole marriage in our dwelling, in our vehicles, and because Susan allowed me to do the things that I do. Now, we've all, every now and then, every couple of times a year, somebody wins the Powerball. Somebody wins the Mega Millions. And you've all played the what if game. Wow. What would you do? And all the experts say that if you ever win mega 500, 600, 700, take the one-time payout. Can you imagine having $400 million in your bank account? I'll be honest with you. Tomorrow's Monday. If I went on my cell phone and went to Midwest America and I looked at my savings account and it said $400 million, that would be a life-changing moment for me. Oh, boy. And I'm going to suffer for that one. I heard a guy say that. What would you do? Oh, that's a life-changing moment. $400 million. Oof. I said, he was serious. Because we sat around the table. We were talking. And he said, what would I do? I'd pay off my wife and leave her, and she'd leave me. I'd give her half, I'd take my half, and we would leave each other. Are you, really? He said, yeah. Wow. Yeah, he said, that would be a life-changing moment for me. Unbelievable. I wonder if she knows that. Maybe she does. I don't know. But we have to learn, because when you learn contentment, that's how God can know that if you're content with where you are, that God knows I can give you more. Because you've shown me you can control yourself. Look at everything I read at the beginning. How did we get this way? I don't know. turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, just a couple more. Hebrews chapter 13, and I want to read verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he saith, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be content. You might not be. Laura and David, where are they going to be when they're in their mid-30s, mid-40s? I don't know. But if they're content now, and they can control themselves with their finances and everything and try to stay out of debt, then God can bless you and give you, because you've proven to him that you're mature enough to control yourself. Why? Because you're not trying to impress people. And God, that's a humility that I think God likes. I think he likes that. If you will, to show that, go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 13. And I want to read verse 22. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. So God will take the wealth away from the unjust if he needs to. But he says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. Well, that's grandchildren. Now, so far, me and Susan, we only got one. What I would like to happen, and I've told Lauren David this. I hope they hear these words. I hope they do. I said, here's the thing is, okay, me and Susan, we're debt-free. We don't have anything. Okay, hopefully we got a few more years left, but when that day comes and we're both gone, you guys get everything. Okay, pay off your house, get out of debt. If you don't, get one. But take that, and what great life would you have if you could have a home and a car and be debt-free, and then you can acquire wealth and pass it on to your kids or grandchildren. Because that's where we are. See, back in biblical, they didn't have a lot of the nonsense they got. They had some of it. But the best way I can help my children's children is to take care of my children and raise them to be disciplined enough to understand contentment. You don't need a bigger house. You don't need more. You don't need more. More is not good. Be content. And then look at the joy you would have, and then you can pass that on to your grandchildren. If you will, okay, stay in Proverbs. Go to the book of Proverbs chapter 22. And I want to read verses 1 through 7. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Thorns and snares are in the way of the forward. He that doth keep his soul shall be far from them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is a servant to the lender. Okay, you're a slave. That's another word for slavery as far as I'm concerned. And again, when you buy something, you owe it to yourself to try to pay that off as fast as you can. Now, I'm going to share one more little story. It's one of the greatest conversations I ever had with someone back when I was 19. I graduated in 77. My first car I got 2 years before I graduated. It was a 68 Olds 442. And I got into ironworkers, and I got through it, and I started to save a little bit and all that. Well, it was hard for me with that car. It was a big old two-door. It had a trunk. I had all my ironworker tools. So I decided I wanted to buy an El Camino. It's like a little truck and car combo, and I put a cab on a cover on the back of it because I can put all my ironworker tools in the back. I can put my golf clubs over in the back seat and keep it out of the weather. And it's a two-seater. I was single at the time. No big deal. So I sold my car, I remember it. My dad went with me. He negotiated for me. The sticker price on that El Camino was $8,300-something. The guy said he let me have it for $6,800. This was 1979, brand new. And I had a little money to make a down. Well, I had to borrow a little bit. And I don't remember. Let's say my car payment was $100 a month. And back then, they sent you a coupon booklet. And it had the date on it. And you paired a coupon off. Well, that was in November. I got my car on Thanksgiving Day of 78. Me and Dad went and picked it up the next Friday. Well, the following spring, I did my taxes, and I got a nice little refund. And I think, well, heck, I'm going to go down here. I'm going to make like three car payments. And back then, your refund was a paper check. So I go to the bank. I park. I go in there, and I peeled off three coupons and said, hey, I want to make three car payments. I'm going to pay April, May, June. Wow, I'm not going to have a car payment till July. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. And I went up there, and she said, oh, you don't want to do that. I go, why not? I'm going to get ahead. Oh, no. Come here, let me talk to you for a second. And she explained to me, interest, she said, here, just make one. Because if you don't make a payment next month on the 15th, you're going to have to pay a late fee. And you're going, all right, yeah, but I'm paying it now. No, you don't want to do that. And she kind of had to get through to me. Because I'm thinking, wow, I'm making three car payments. I'm going to be able to relax for a little bit. She says, you don't want it. And then she explained to me, no, put that extra on one and take these other ones and do it every single month. Because if you skip that, because let's say I'm going to make up say that $100, $50 is interest and $50 is on principal. But if you skip 3 months, by the time you make that next one because of 3 months of late fees, that $100, maybe 80 of it is for penalties, and only 20 goes on there, and you won't pay it in time. Now I'm trying to remember. This was a long time ago, but she explained. I never heard that. Nobody ever explained it to me, and I thought I had a good idea. I want to pay ahead. I got a little extra money, savings account's good. I want to make it. And she said, no, you don't want to do that. And wow, that changed my life from 19 to where I am today. And I tried to teach that to Laura and David. Anytime you have to borrow money, if you can, try to pay it off as fast as you can and pay more. One last reading. Turn to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8, to show you something. Deuteronomy chapter 8, I'm going to read in verse 10. This is humility. This is humility. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 10. When thou hast eaten and art full, when thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given, beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built godly houses and dwell within, things are going good. And when thy herbs and thy flocks multiply, because they followed the blessing of the tithing maybe back then, and the silver and the gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through the great and terrible wilderness, wherein thee were fiery serpents, scorpions, and drought, where there was no water. Who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint? Who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee, to do thee good at the latter end? And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hands have gotten me this wealth. See the arrogance? But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. And he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget after forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. and all the nations which the Lord destroyed before you, your face, so shall ye perish, because ye would not have not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. So whatever talent you have to make the living you make, and the income you have, that gift, that talent came from God. And you can honor him, and you can humble yourself, and you can be content with where you are, and then maybe he can bless you next year, down the road again. But look at what happens if you think it's mine, heart. Look at the arrogant guy who went into the temple and said, wow, I give a lot of money. I must really be something. No, you're not, because your heart's all wrong. So please, loved ones, I know it. I hope I didn't get too personal, but do everything you can. Try to be content with where you are. And whatever you do, do not waste one more day trying to keep up with the Joneses. Okay, God bless you, and may the gods of our fathers bless each and every one of you.